Thank you for taking the time to special for all of us. You know, on Sunday mornings, or sometimes Monday mornings when I get in the office, I go through the cards, particularly the visitors' cards, and see how many local visitors we have and read on the back for comments. And I keep thinking that at some point somebody's going to say something about a good preacher and a good sermon, but I hadn't found that yet, but almost every single week somebody says something about a good song leader and good singing. And they did again this morning, someone visiting. And so I've told Sonny before, and you probably have heard me say this, that I've told him that if he ever decides that he's not going to lead singing anymore, to give me a six-month lead so I can leave. Because people might think it has something to do with the preaching, but he and I know it has a lot to do with the singing. So certainly we do appreciate it, and it's a lot of fun. It's very encouraging to sing these songs, and Sonny puts lots of thought and enthusiasm into it. In this morning's lesson, we talked about hope, and I read a letter to you from a young man, Sergey, that gave you just a little information about him, that he was from Minsk, Belarus, and Sergey was writing during a time of loss of he and his wife Anastasia's first babies, twin babies, and I had several people who have asked me additional questions about this young couple, and so I thought I'd give you just a little bit more information since there seemed to be as much interest as there was. Some of you know that some years ago, Janice and I sponsored a young man from Belarus to come here to the States to attend Harding University. His name was Misha Kalgin, and lots of stories there. But one of the things is we took Misha back to Belarus one of the times he went back, and I have told you before about taking Kendra and Leanne, my two youngest, and going back to Belarus and starting a youth camp there. Well, Misha was at this youth camp as a counselor, and he met a young Christian lady there, and there are not a lot of Christians in Belarus. Certainly not a lot of young people who are Christians. But he met a young Christian lady at that camp who later, following his graduation from Harding, he went back to Belarus and they married. And they are, Misha and his wife Lisa, are currently living in China. And he is working for an IT company there. And this young couple that you saw, heard the letter from the husband and saw the picture of he and his wife Anastasia, this young lady is a sister to the young girl that Misha married. And so that's the contact that we have. This young man, Sergey, has graduated from a Christian school that is operated by the First Christian Church. And that all came about sometime shortly after he became a Christian. I mean, you saw, obviously, from listening to his letters that he is a very capable young man as far as writing and thinking and so forth. Well, he wrote just on his own. He wrote a thesis which caught the attention of some folks here in the States, and consequently he was offered and granted a scholarship, full scholarship, to that school. And so he has now graduated from that school and is in Dallas attending a school in association with a translation group, the Pioneer Translation Center or group. I'm not quite sure of the official name, but with the expectation of going back to Belarus and doing some writing and some translating work. And some of you have already mentioned that you felt like you don't know him, but he ought to do some writing. And so just to give you a little bit more information about that couple, and some of you have asked me for their email address. I think I put it on one of the first emails or one of the postings that I put on our WOCC Prayer Partners group. But if I didn't, you let me know, and I'll post it so that if you would like to write him a letter of let him know that you're praying for them, I'm sure that they would very much appreciate it. Just so you'll know, this morning's lesson was just my introduction. And so I want to finish my lesson tonight talking a little bit more about hope and talk a little bit about what hope does for us. Hope, first of all, brings optimism. And I think, if I remember correctly, that some months ago, Nathan on the Wednesday night used this little illustration in his class, but I wanted to use it again. Maybe you heard the story about in the ancient kingdom, a king decided that he was going to punish one of his subjects for a crime that he had committed. And he brought the man before him and he told him, at dawn tomorrow, I'm going to give the order to the executioner and you will go to the gallows and be hanged. And the man looks at the king, and he begins to beg for mercy. And he tells the king, O king, if you'll grant me 1 year's time, during that time I will teach your horse how to fly. All that I ask is, if I teach your horse how to fly, then you'll set me free. Well, he could tell that he caught the king's attention, and so he pursued it. He said, think about it, my king. You'll be the only king on the face of the earth with a horse that can actually fly. All the other kings will admire you because of your flying horse. And king, what do you have to lose? If I fail to teach your horse to fly, then at the end of a year, you can take me and have me hanged and put to death. So the king thought about the man's proposition and the possibility of having the only flying horse. And he said to the man, okay, I'll make that bargain with you. You're free to go for now and go and teach my horse how to fly. Well, a short time later, one of the man's friends came up to him and he asked, what in the world were you thinking? That's the craziest idea in the world. You can't teach a horse how to fly any more than you can fly yourself. And at the end of the year, the king is going to be really angry with you and he's going to execute you. The man responded, think about it. In a year's time, the king might die. Within a year's time, I might die a natural death. In a year's time, the horse might die. And who knows? In a year, I just might teach that horse how to fly. Well, that's optimism. That's hope. Now, I won't talk about how well-founded it might be, but hope is a valuable thing. That's what happens when you live with hope in your life. You have this optimism, this positive expectation. Hope also inspires persistence. When there's hope, you keep on trying and you don't give up. And boy, that's really needed in our lives, isn't it? When we get discouraged, things start going wrong. We start experiencing difficulties in our life. We get discouraged and we just get tired and we decide that we just don't know if it's worth continuing. We want to give up. You remember the story of Elijah in 1 Kings chapter 17? Elijah is the prophet of God that confronted King Ahab, that wicked king of Israel who happened to be married to a more wicked woman, Jezebel. Elijah prayed that God, before all of the incident happened on Mount Carmel, he prayed that God would shut up the heavens and that there would be no rain. And the Bible attests to the fact that because of that prayer, there was neither rain nor dew on the earth in that region for 3.5 years. Now, I've been involved in a drought before, but I've never been involved in one that there was absolutely no rain, no dew for 3.5 years. Finally, at the end of chapter 18, Elijah climbs to the top of Mount Carmel. He bends down to the ground. He buries his face between his knees, and he tells his servant, Gehazi, go and look toward the sea and tell me what you see. The servant goes to the crest of the hill. He looks toward the sea, comes back, and he says, I don't see anything. And Elijah tells him, go back. He prays again, tells him, go back and look again. The servant goes, he looks and he returns and he tells Elijah that he saw absolutely nothing. Five more times, He prays. He tells his servant to go and look. The servant comes back and he says, I don't see anything. He prays again. He tells his servant to go look. He goes and looks. He comes back and he says, well, there's a little something. There is a cloud about the size of a man's hand that's rising from the sea. And Elijah gets excited. And he says, go tell Ahab it's going to rain. Hitch up the chariot and get off this mountain before the rain comes. Now, I know it was only a little cloud, but it was a little cloud of hope. And when you have no hope, a little cloud of hope will save your life. And particularly if it's something that God is behind. I know it was a prayer of faith. But it was also a cloud of hope. Why did Elijah keep praying and keep on sending Gehazi back time after time when he kept coming back and said, there's nothing, there's nothing, there's nothing, there's nothing. And he kept on. And I wonder if he hadn't seen it that seventh time, how many more times he would have sent him back. I suspect he wasn't at the end of his rope yet. But on that seventh time, he came back because Elijah believed enough to have hope. You see, when you truly believe God, you can't lose your hope. You lose your hope when you quit believing. And as long as you believe that God is able and willing, you have hope. And Elijah had hope. He knew that God could, and he hoped that he would. He felt some confidence that he would. And so he wouldn't quit praying. And so it is with us today. Hope inspires persistence. And hope also makes us attractive. You can't have true hope in your life without it being evident, even in your physical body. People can look at you and know if you are discouraged, despondent, depressed, or if you are filled with hope. They don't even have to ask you anything. It shows up in your face, doesn't it? And if you're depressed and you go around and you don't really have any hope and you're pessimistic, then you don't have any energy. You don't have a smile on your face. You don't have any life about you. But whenever you're filled with hope, you have a smile on your face. You are encouraged. You are an encourager. You have energy in your life. You make the gospel attractive when you're filled with hope because it shows in your life and it shows in your face. And you make the gospel unattractive whenever you don't have hope. Jesus is the giver of hope. He is the reason that we have hope. In Matthew chapter 4, verse 18 through 22, Jesus is walking along the seashore, the Sea of Galilee. And he sees in the distance two brothers, Peter and Andrew, casting their fishing nets into the sea. He approaches them and he says, come follow me and I'll make you fishers of men. The Bible says immediately they left their nets and followed Jesus. He goes a little bit further and he sees two more brothers, James and John. They're also fishermen in a family business. They've grown up in it. He calls to them the same message, follow me. And they also leave their boat, their nets, and their father, and they follow Jesus. Has it ever occurred to you to wonder why these men would at least seemingly so quickly and easily leave what they have and follow Jesus? I know that Brother Elton has taught us some lessons about Jesus, the rabbi, and it has something to do with the rabbi who comes along and gives you an invitation to follow him. Somebody would say, well, they followed him because of their faith. And I would say, well, maybe. But I have a little bit of difficulty in seeing that as the primary motivation because their faith was pretty weak at this time. Their faith will grow as we'll watch them over the next 2.5 or so years. Somebody said, well, it was because of love. maybe. But they didn't know a lot about Jesus. They knew some about him. They had had a little bit of personal contact with him, but not much. They'd heard a lot about him. But I have some question of whether or not it would have been motivated, this radical a move on their part would have been motivated by love. But I really do think it was mostly out of hope. They longed for something better in their life. And they saw in Jesus the possibility of something much greater. They had heard enough about Jesus that there was some amount of hope that stirred within their breast. Jesus, inviting them to follow him, gave them hope for their future. In Matthew chapter 5, in the Sermon on the Mount, Jesus is on the mountainside teaching the multitudes. And they keep coming, and they keep coming. And they can't get enough of Jesus' teaching. And they come until there are thousands of them, and they sit down on the side of the mountain, and Jesus teaches them. And he begins with what we call the Beatitudes. And when we study the Beatitudes at the beginning of the Sermon on the Mount in Matthew chapter 5, we normally focus on the first parts of those statements. Blessed are the poor in spirit. Blessed are they that mourn. Blessed are the meek. Blessed are they who hunger and thirst after righteousness, the pure in heart, the peacemakers. Blessed are they who are persecuted. But the words that were riveting to this crowd that was assembled there were not the words about being poor or about mourning or about being humble or hungering or thirsting or needing mercy or being persecuted. They knew about those things all too well. But when Jesus talked of inheriting the kingdom, and he talked of being comforted by God and inheriting the earth and being filled when you're hungry and mercy, and seeing God and becoming children of God, then their ears perked up because of the hope that's in that message. Jesus was giving these people hope. People who were like sheep without a shepherd. The Beatitudes is not so much a sermon about blessings as it is a sermon about hope. And then in Matthew chapter 8, Jesus comes down off the mountain and he encounters a man with leprosy. And if there's ever been someone who was in a hopeless situation, it's a person in that society at that time in history with advanced leprosy. There is no hope for such a person. He's going to die a slow, lonely death. His appendages and his limbs will lose their feeling, the circulation, and they will begin to rot away, literally. And their appearance and the smell became unbearable. And they would live an isolated life with others of their own kind, treated by their families, by and large, as if they were already dead. That's a desperate and hopeless situation. Until one day, he hears about Jesus of Nazareth. And he's heard some rumors. He's heard that he's a healer. He's heard about him giving sight to the blind. He knows enough about Jesus to dare allow some hope to stir within his dying breast. And he comes boldly, radically, he comes to Jesus. Even as crowds were around, and I'm sure that people in anger parted the way, and he came before Jesus and he knelt and he begged, Lord, if you're willing, you can make me clean. He has some hope. And Jesus did what others were unwilling and unable to do. He reached out and touched him, and he said, I'm willing. Be clean. And his wildest dreams and hopes were realized. And we could continue to the next story and the next story about a centurion whose servant was dying and about a paralytic man who was lowered through the roof by his friends, and about a synagogue ruler named Jairus whose 12-year-old little girl had died already. Story after story after story about hopeless people who found hope and whose hope was realized in Jesus of Nazareth. I want this church to be a church of love and faith and hope. And I know that you do too. And we're in the process of encouraging one another in those three things. Love, learning how to love like Jesus loved, growing our faith together, and having a hope that's beyond anything that this world offers, that supersedes all of the circumstances that can possibly happen, so that one day we'll be able to say with all of our heart, why should I fear what man can do unto me? Why should we? The worst that he can do is take our life. And he just sent us home. Just put us on a train going home. Why should I fear what man can do unto me? Story after story about hopeless people who found hope in Jesus. We want to be a church where those whom the world has beaten down can come and find acceptance and love and hope. Isaiah said it like this. He gives strength to the weary and increases the power of the weak. Even youths grow tired and weary, and young men stumble and fall, but those who hope in the Lord will renew their strength. They will soar on wings like eagles. They will run and not grow weary. They will walk and not be faint. And so the application that I want to leave you with this lesson is, have you allowed that deep hope within you to grow dim? If it does, you become discouraged. You're not really on fire for serving the Lord. But if you believe enough to have hope, then there's a fire that burns brightly within you that won't let you be still. It won't let you just be live a common life. It causes you to soar on wings like eagles, to run and not be discouraged and not be faint, but to work every day for the Lord, because we realize that we live in a world that does beat people down. It beats the life out of you. It beats the hope out of you. And Jesus Christ is the giver of hope. Let's stand and sing.